friends, was Warren Zevon's tune Straight Down, about a chemically laced future, about a future where pesticides, herbicides, and compounds surround you. They're in your food, they're in your drink, and my friends, we're getting closer and closer to that every day. Tonight, however, we have some people coming on who are going to talk about the dangers and what you can do to avoid them, and of course, to talk about the people who are in the most danger, those exposed to the very most. And let me introduce my good friend, Jeannie Economos of the Farm Workers Association. Jeannie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here again, Rick. Good to talk to you.
It's our pleasure, my dear. You know, we carry a lot of content. We talk a lot on this show about a variety of environmental concerns, a variety of the environmental insults that our communities suffer. And you deal with a very, very special at-risk community. In fact, your work is to help people try to protect themselves. Jeannie, why don't you tell us a bit about the work that you do and why you're with us tonight to share some more information. Jeannie Economos.
Sure. Thanks, Rick. I've been working with the Farm Worker Association of Florida for about 15 years. We are a very grassroots farm worker organization in Florida. It's a statewide organization with 5 offices in the state. And the organization has been around for about 33 years, with our main programs or interests in fighting for immigrants' rights and pesticide health and safety of farm workers. My job is to work with the communities in Florida. We do pesticide education trainings for farm workers to try and help them protect themselves from pesticide exposure. We also file complaints with agencies when there's violations in the workplace, when farm workers come to us and tell us that they've been exposed or are having health symptoms. But in addition to that, we also work on policy issues to try and change the policies to get better protections for farm workers against pesticide exposure. We also do community-based research projects with academic institutions, and my colleague Antonio Tovar has been very involved with that as a researcher and as an anthropologist. But we work on also trying to reduce. Not only do we want to protect farm workers, but we also want to reduce the use of pesticides around the country and internationally. And that is to protect the environment, to protect farm workers, and ultimately to protect all of us.
Well, your colleague has arrived, so let me bring him on. Welcome, sir. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be in this program.
We're honored, sir, to have you join us. And we know you and Gene will be bringing us so much information. Jeannie, I'm going to let you kind of run things for now. And you can basically lay out what you want to talk about and what you want to have your colleague talk about. Jeannie, the show is yours, my dear.
Well, thank you. I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the things that I see personally because I am in the community. We are not an advocacy organization. We are a social justice organization. We are, again, very grassroots. Our community is the farm worker community. Most of our staff are current or former farm workers themselves, and so is our board of directors. So we're not an outside organization that's just advocating for farm workers. We are the communities that we work in. And we feel very strongly about the need to give people dignity and agency over their own lives. Because every day, the people that feed us are often don't have enough food themselves to eat and often put their lives at risk, both in one of the most dangerous occupations in the country, including exposure to pesticides. And they're on the front lines of exposure, and they are also the most vulnerable because they're often undocumented immigrants. They often have issues of language and culture, and immigration status that makes them even more vulnerable. So we feel that they do some of the most important work in the country by feeding all the rest of us, and yet they do so by putting themselves at great risk. So we're very passionate about making sure that farm workers get honored and recognized. It's appropriate to have this call right before Thanksgiving because people will be sitting down to their Thanksgiving dinners and probably saying grace or giving thanks for the food. But we encourage people to also thank farm workers and think about farm workers on Thanksgiving. But just quickly getting back to the pesticide issue, there have been different classes of pesticides over the years. So, for example, organochlorine pesticides were used very heavily in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and even early 70s. They're an extremely toxic class of pesticides that are called persistent organic pollutants because they stay in the soil, they stay in the body, and they can cause long-term environmental and health damage to the planet, to our environment, and to all of us. But sadly, even though most of those pesticides have been banned, they were just replaced by another class of pesticides called organophosphates. And for a long time, organophosphates were considered so much safer than organochlorines. But we know now that organophosphates cause things like ADHD and learning disabilities, and even possibly autism in children that are exposed in utero to these pesticides through their parents. And not just necessarily farm workers. It can be children that are living in rural communities. And you've seen an increase in autism, learning disabilities, and ADHD across the country, which calls into question whether some of that might not be related to pesticide exposure. But just very quickly, so organophosphates, we know now that they're a lot worse than we thought. They're now being replaced by another class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, and people might have heard about the neonics because they are now being implicated in the bee colony collapse. So if bees around the country and around the world are being affected by this new class of pesticides, then certainly, maybe not as dramatic, but certainly they're having a health on farm workers too. And one of the very sad things about these neonicotinoid pesticides is they're not just applied on the crops through aerial spraying or a backpack spraying, but they're actually coated on the seeds of many crops. So about 95% of corn seeds in the United States are not only genetically modified corn, but they're also the seeds are also coated with this pesticide. So it's systemic in the plant. About 30% or 33% of our soybean crop have neonicotinoid-coated seeds. And farm workers also work in the ornamental plant industry. Increasingly, a lot of the ornamental plants that you buy in stores also came from seeds coated with pesticides, which is why a group of organizations worked together to try and get some hardware stores to agree to eventually phase out getting any plants from nurseries that use neonicotinoid-coated seeds. So there was a big campaign against Lowe's and Home Depot, and there continues to be a campaign against Ace Hardware and True Value to try and phase out these pesticides. So
Jeannie,
that's saying a lot, but I just wanted to make the connection. Uh-huh.
Sure. And I appreciate that. And I'm going to let you continue in a minute. But I think there's something that a lot of people don't realize. I'm under the impression, and I think a lot of people also are, or at least I was at one point, that the way pesticides and herbicides are applied is that they make sure that no one's in the field, and then they spray these toxic compounds, and then after they're allowed to dissipate, the workers go back in. That's not it at all, is it?
Sadly, that's not the case. Legally, they're not supposed to apply pesticides when people are in the fields or within a certain distance of the application. But the reality is that it happens all the time. We literally have people come into our offices every week that tell us that they are working in a row and they're spraying two or three rows down. And technically there's a regulation that pesticides are not supposed to be applied where they can drift onto to workers or even other people passing by. But no one controls the wind or the breeze or other atmospheric conditions. And so pesticide drift goes into homes, schools, communities, and where people are working. People have told us that they come home wet, not from rain, not from dew, not from irrigation, but from pesticides. Clothes, and it gets on their bodies, then it becomes residue, and they take that with them wherever they go. So they take it home to their cars, to their homes, if they pick up their children. That's one of the reasons we train them to be sure to wash themselves, take off their clothes before they go home, wash their work clothes separate from their household clothes or their other clothes. We do all kinds of trainings to tell them to take precautions. But like one farm worker told us in a focus group one time, we told her all these things to do to protect herself. And she turned to me and she said, but we still have to breathe the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you say to somebody when they tell you that?
It's true. Just recently I was hearing that, and I think I mentioned this to you before the show, that in California, and I'm sure it's not just there, but this person happened to be mentioning it, that in California, wastewater from fracking is being used to irrigate, quote, organic crops. Now, how could you in any way call something organic if it's being sprayed with the wastewater from fracking with all the chemicals in that? And then I also heard just recently that Cheerios, which one normally connects with about as wholesome a breakfast meal as you can imagine, that both Cheerios and recently breast milk has shown signs of Roundup in it.
Oh yes, Roundup is pretty much ubiquitous. I used to work at a botanical gardens years ago, and the only herbicide that they would use was Roundup, and I kept arguing about that because I kept saying that it wasn't safe. And the pesticide companies were really good at fooling everybody. Even people who really felt that they were environmentalists and believed in sustainability were completely snowed by the pesticide companies because they had convinced people that Roundup was perfectly safe. But now we know that Roundup is linked to various kinds of cancers. It contaminates groundwater. And it's one of the most ubiquitous pesticides there is, and it's also related, and I think most people listening to your show probably already know this, but it's also related to GMOs, because GMOs were partly created so that more Roundup could be sold. And with the increasing use of GMOs, there's increasing use of Roundup, and studies have shown that using GMO plants and Roundup increases yields maybe the first 4 or 5 years of use, and then after that the yield goes down for many reasons, including the fact that the Roundup and other pesticides also kill the beneficial bacteria and nutrients and organisms, not nutrients but organisms in the soil. So it in the end depletes the soil and really damages the soil for other crops in the future. So it's a totally unsustainable a method of agriculture, which is why, and maybe Antonio can come in on this, which is why that our organization has been moving to a new philosophy called agroecology. And just very, very quickly, farm worker organizations around the country have been fighting since the days of Cesar Chavez, more than 30, 40 years ago, even 50 years ago, fighting for better protections for farm workers. And there have been some gains. It's definitely better than it was 40 years ago. However, we still have a long way to go to get strong protections for farm workers, and that's partly because of the systemic problems within our entire agricultural system. And we have finally come to an understanding that and the agricultural system, again, most people know this, is just getting bigger and bigger. Large farms are swallowing up small farms, and agribusiness companies are getting bigger and bigger and richer and more powerful. So a new strategy for confronting our current agricultural system, rather than going farm by farm or policy by policy, is to subvert the entire agricultural system by adopting principles of agroecology. And those principles include doing agricultural production in concert with the earth, being guided by the earth, but also bringing in indigenous, cultural, ethnic, community principles to a sustainable agriculture that builds community and builds the soil and provides healthy, sustainable food for the people who engage in it. So that's where our new strategy is taking us, and we have 3 community gardens, and I say community gardens, but I don't want that. It's much bigger than a community garden. It's a philosophy. It's a grounding. It's a community builder. It's a resistance against current agriculture. So we have 3 community gardens, and we're starting a 4th one in our office in Apopka very soon. And again, it's a form of resistance to the dominant paradigm of agriculture. And so that's where we're headed.
Well, that sounds like some good news for a change. Bravo. Now, we have another guest here. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him, Jeanine?
So my colleague is Antonio Tovar, and he's one of the most amazing people I've ever met. He does multiple things, but he is also a doctor of anthropology, and he's been with the Farm Worker Association for over 10 years and has engaged in several very powerful community-based research projects with academic institutions, and I'll let him take it from there.
Thank you for joining us, sir.
No, thank you for having me. I think that some of the points that I would like to start with is this notion that the agriculture industry, one of the arguments about the development of pesticides is that they are used because they want to produce more food to feed the world. And I think that that's a myth that has been overrided, because one of the first issues in terms of feeding the world is that many people don't know that the United States pretty much wastes at least 30% of their production, because, and that's an issue with consumers, because most of the consumers have the idea that the fruit and vegetables that we consume has to look perfect. So the supermarkets actually only look for fruits and vegetables that look perfect, always being the biggest, always being the more pretty kind of fruit and vegetables, and the rest of that fruit and vegetables end up in the garbage. There's not harvested, and that's one of the first issues. The other issue in terms of the agro industry is that most of the pesticides are targeting to some crops that they are leaving more money for these companies. Soybeans, corn, wheat, all these big production that actually have a very low quality of nutritional value for the people. So they are targeting very specific kind of production that actually will not solve the issue of hunger, the problem of feeding the world. It's more an strategy to have this kind of production that will use a lot of pesticides. So that's one of the issues. Now, how Jeannie was saying, there's also the matter of how the industry is becoming bigger and bigger. And that has to do also with the kind of production that they do. And also the reduction of cost. Because when you produce in a way that is more sustainable in terms of agroecology, for instance, you actually will need more people involved into this production. Pesticide, what it does is to create a cheap production. Not very nutritional, but definitely in big quantity, which is what this company is trying to do. That's why they are in the big corporations. No, not all products or not all food will have some income that the big capital will like to see. So it is just very specific targets. Now, like Jeannie was saying, many of these pesticides will go in your own products and your issues that you consume. For instance, and recently we did a study with University of South Florida in terms of breast milk, and we were analyzing precisely this chemical that is in Roundup. And
right.
We compare women that were breastfeeding in rural areas, farm workers, and we compare them with women that were breastfeeding in the city, in Tampa, and they both have traces of pesticides. And it's not because the women in the city are exposed in the farms to these pesticides. It's because they are getting these pesticides from the products that they consume. So it is something that at the end is ending in the body of all of us. So it is a big problem.
Could you address what the parts per million or parts per billion is?
I don't have the dates, the numbers in front of me, but they were
sure.
A significant compared to what the national standard with CDC. But they were significant in terms of, of course, the women in rural areas, the women that are doing the farming, they were even higher than the
sure.
women that they were on the city. But still, because Florida is an agricultural place, and Tampa is not far away from farms, we
sure.
suspect that there would be more exposure that. The national average, where there's people that they do not get close to farming areas.
Rick, I think I might have said this on a previous show, but there was a study, I think about 5 years ago in California,
mm-hmm.
where they looked at elementary school kids. I think the kids were about 7 years old.
Uh-huh.
And they studied the children's urine for a week, just eating normal foods.
Right.
And then for 1 week, they had the children eat nothing but organic foods, and they studied
uh-huh.
the urine every day. And then they did, then again, after the week of eating nothing but organic foods, they had the kids go back to conventional food, and they did urine samples every day. And they found some dramatic results. The week that the children were eating only organic foods, the levels of pesticides in their urine dropped to almost nothing. So unlike organochlorine or other pesticides, and they were testing for organophosphate pesticides. So
yeah.
organophosphate pesticides can go out of your system within a few days. But once you start eating conventional food again, then they are back in your system again. And these are the same pesticides, as I mentioned earlier, that are linked to ADHD and learning disabilities. So
right.
I think that's – I don't know the parts per billion, but that was the results of their study, that there was, you could see dramatic differences between the children during the week that they were eating organic and then when they were eating conventional foods. So it is, you know, it's pretty much indisputable now. That we're all getting it.
It's just so terrible that this exposure is now absolutely ubiquitous. And I was very, very intrigued by Mr. I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last name.
Antonio.
Yeah. Your results here in Florida as well. What a shame. So now there is a day coming up to show respect and to heighten the awareness of this toxic exposure. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. December 3rd has been designated as International Agrotóxicos Day. Agrotóxicos is Spanish, of course, for toxic agricultural chemicals. And December 3rd is a day for raising awareness around the country and with our brothers and sisters in Central and South America about the harmful effects of toxic agricultural chemicals, both on the environment and on humans, but also the fact that it is a human right. We all have a human right not to be exposed to these chemicals. And so that's one of the reasons that we're talking about this now, because December 3rd is coming up and we want people to do something to think about that day, take some actions to try and stop the use of these toxic chemicals in the environment. Also, just briefly, in mid-October, people might have heard about the Monsanto Tribunal.
And no, that no, was, tell us about it.
Oh, well, we were not able to go to it because it was too expensive.
Right.
But the Monsanto Tribunal was held in The Hague on the 14th through the 16th of October. And it was like an international people's court that actually put Monsanto on trial for ecocide.
Wow.
Basically for killing the environment and killing people, and for violations of human rights. People can go to MonsantoTribunal.org and see the testimonies that were given, to read some of the proceedings. And there are actual judges that are using the proceedings that the International Court of Justice uses to actually put Monsanto on trial. And they should be coming out with a decision in the near future. So it was a way to put Monsanto on trial internationally from communities and organizations all around the world saying that Monsanto has got to stop damaging all of us for their corporate profits. So I really encourage people to go to the website, MonsantoTribunal.org, to learn more about that and to see what you can do to you know, to inform others about it and to speak out against Monsanto and what they're doing to the world. And just also quickly, I'm sure people must have heard about the fact that Monsanto and Bayer are trying to merge, is a horrible concept, because right now we still have six major pesticide corporations, but with the proposed mergers, that would bring it down to three major pesticide corporations basically controlling the world. And so we all have to try and stop the merger of Bayer and Monsanto. And just quickly, people think of Bayer as Bayer Aspirin and Bayer Medicine, but Bayer is one of the top producers of pesticides in the world. So when you hear about Bayer Aspirin, think about Bayer producing pesticides.
And also when you think about Monsanto, go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
It's because it's very important. What Ginny said is, for instance, Syngenta is also one of the other larger companies of pesticide, but they are also do pharmacy pharmacos. And something that the people should realize is that there is a direct connection in terms of pesticide and these pharmaceuticals, because they create an illness and then they have the medicine. Surprise, surprise. Again, it's a completely a money maker. And it's
right.
a money maker
right.
that is actually making people sick, and it's going to ruin the society as a whole.
And they're all based, most of them are all based on petrochemicals. So there's your, you have the loop between the pesticide companies, the pharmaceuticals, and the fossil fuel industry. So it's a very ugly triumvirate there.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
And also Monsanto is invested in the firm that used to be called Blackwater. They have their own armed contingent now at Monsanto.
Yes, yes. It's very, very frightening. But if the people organize, if the people speak out, we're not at all unaware of how huge the foe is. But just like we are fighting now against attacks against immigrants from this new administration, our call word is resistance. So we're calling on everybody to resist. We have to resist the pesticide companies. We have to resist the anti-immigrant hatred. We have to resist corporate control of our government and our lives. It's called upon all of us right now to stand up in resistance and to fight for civil rights, human rights, justice, and rights for the earth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to thank you both so much for coming. This is so important. And when people sit down to their holiday meal and they think of the nations, the First Nations people who without their help, the Europeans could not have survived. And yet they were dealt so tragically. And unfortunately, as we know, that same insult to their humanity goes on in North Dakota and across the country. And we should also be thinking of our good brothers and sisters in the agriculture field who are literally exposing themselves to these terrible, terrible chemicals. We need to stand with them. And thank you so much for raising our awareness of these important issues. Is there any final word you want to leave with us?
Well, just our slogan is "Got food? Thank a farm worker." On Thanksgiving and every day.
There you go.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks,
thank you,
Rick,
sir.
We appreciate it. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we want to cover a couple other additional stories. You may know that there has been an earthquake off the coast of Japan, the same area near Fukushima, and they're also calling for another tsunami. You may know, if you pay close attention, that they have not yet resolved anything about those reactors there in Fukushima. They are still leaking into the Pacific. They are still exposing people, not just in Fukushima Prefecture, but across Japan. And also, on the front in the American government, there are some very, very terrible stories. Greg Palast has brought forward evidence of the election deception again. So I urge you to check out Greg Palast and look at the information he has surfaced already on this recent election. Another story I want to bring to your attention is Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark has unleashed a series of tweets calling for a state of emergency be declared and for the ongoing anti-Trump protests to be violently quelled. He tweeted, how to stop the riots, declare a state of emergency, impose early curfews, mobilize the National Guard, authorize all non-lethal force, tear gas. And then one more story I want to bring to your attention. The recent attack on the protectors, the water protectors in North Dakota, this time in the sub-freezing temperatures, and they unleashed water cannons and sound grenades. And they claimed that the water cannons were only used to put out fires. There were no fires. There was no riot. The only rioting was done by the police. So stay tuned, folks. We'll talk to you Sunday. This is Richard Spezak, news director of Progressive News Network. On behalf of myself and the good people of Florida Media Labs, I want to thank you, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. A little out music, I think, is appropriate. Let's go back to Mr. Leon Russell or Warren Zevon. Let's go ahead and close out with Warren Zevon straight down. Yeah.